Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Roland Martin, every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
Good morning. I'm Laura Coates in for Roland Martin, who'll be joining us shortly. Just ahead on News One Now, we have breaking news on Capitol Hill, where Democrats are in the midst of a sit-in led by Congressman John Lewis.
We're calling on the leadership of the House to bring common sense gun control legislation to the House floor. Give us a vote. Let us vote. We came here to do our job. We came here to work.
No bill, no break. That's the stance Democrats are taking as they take over the floor of the U.S. House all day and all night, demanding a vote on gun control. We're talking to Congressman Emanuel Cleaver and gun control advocate Lucia McBath. News One Now starts right now.
Announcement regarding the decorum in the House chamber. The chair appreciates that members will differ on matters of policy and will seek to express those differences. But the chair would hope that the business of the House could be conducted in a fashion that respects positively on the dignity and the decorum of this institution to which we all belong.
In the House of Representatives last night as Speaker Paul Ryan tries to take back control of the chamber. This after Democrats took over the floor holding a sit-in to force votes on gun control. The protest was led by civil rights icon Representative John Lewis.
Do we have the courage? Do we have raw courage to make at least a down payment on ending gun violence in America? We can no longer wait. We can no longer be patient. So today we come to the well of the House to dramatize the need for action. Not next month, not next year, but now, today. Sometime you have to do something out of the ordinary. Sometime you have to make a way out of no way. We have been too quiet for too long. There comes a time when you have to say something, when you have to make a little noise.
Yes. That's right.
When you have to move your feet. This is the time. Now is the time to get in the way.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The time to act is now. We will be silent. No more. The time for silence is over. Now is the time for us to find a way to dramatize it, to make it real. We have to occupy the floor of the House until there's action.
Rise up, Democrats. Rise up, Americans. This cannot stand. We will occupy this floor. We will no longer be denied a right to vote.
It all started shortly before noon yesterday when Democrats shouted down Republican leaders' attempts to gavel the House into session. Eventually, House Speaker Paul Ryan ended the session and the official camera feed was shut off. But Democrats began live streaming the protest on Periscope.
Speaker Ryan, you can run, but you can't hide.
Yeah.
Just this past weekend, 26 Chicagoans shot in one weekend. 26. 13 killed over Father's Day weekend. Enough. Enough.
It's enough.
You can run, but you can't hide. You can run, but you can't.
And so I say today, as we look at what we're doing today. We can win and we will win. 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 We can win and we will win.
Joining me now via Skype from Los Angeles is host Roland Martin. Joining me here in studio is the Congressman from Missouri, Representative Emanuel Cleaver. And in the studio is today's panel. Angela Peoples is the co-director for Forget Equal. Shermichael Singleton is a Republican political consultant. And Yolanda Young is an attorney and columnist for Lawyers of Color. Roland, I want to turn to you first. How are you doing this morning in L.A.?
Doing good. It's very interesting. First of all, I did not get much sleep because I was really up all night as these things were unfolding before our very eyes. It is stunning. In fact, as you can see right over my shoulder, I actually have the live periscope of House Speaker Nancy Pelosi speaking live right now on the House floor, even though they have actually recessed. There's some 32, almost 33,000 people who are watching this live stream right now. It is stunning because C-SPAN's cameras are not on. They're not showing what's happening right now because when the House is not in session, then those things are not shown. I've covered politics for many years. I have never seen anything like this take place in the U.S. House. And I think one of the things that's important that keeps getting overlooked as people are discussing this call for to vote on this particular bill, and that is, and Congressman Cleaver can speak to this, the bill that they're talking about is actually sponsored by Republican Peter King of New York. And so it's not necessarily, oh, this is a Democratic bill. This is House Democrats saying we're tired of not being able to vote. And I would say that if Speaker Ryan actually brought this bill up, it would actually pass. But what he is trying to do, he is trying to keep some of his members who don't want to tick off the NRA, National Rifle Association. He does not want them on record as voting against a bill that would allow terrorists to have guns.
And I want to turn to Congressman Cleaver as well, because it seems as though that's exactly the point here. They're trying not to go on record and they're trying to avoid the bill. What is the problem here? What is the bill that you're trying to pass and you cannot get a vote on?
Well, it's a simple bill. It's about a paragraph. It says that individuals who are on the terror watch list, cannot get on an airplane, who are prevented from getting on airplanes, can buy a gun. You know, they're too dangerous to get on an airplane, but then we give them an opportunity to buy a gun. It's a simple bill. And the Republicans would vote for it. It would be passed overwhelmingly. 435 members of Congress, we'd probably get 400 votes because everybody knows two things. Number one, it is the right thing to do. And number two, it is what the overwhelming majority of the Americans want. The polls show that 90% of Republicans support it. There are about 88% of Democrats, which is weird, but still, this is not an unpopular bill. Speaker Ryan is a smart person, he knows that, but he doesn't want his members to get in trouble with the NRA, as Roland just mentioned. So we would rather have terrorists, people on the terror watch list, to get guns.
Now, it's interesting you bring that point up because people are saying that why even have this fruitless endeavor? It's not going to work out. And your point is that it actually could actually pass muster with the Republican-led House, right?
Oh, yeah,
but
absolutely.
Is the NRA, is that the only reason this is a tactic being used? Is there something else that the American people are missing? Why would Speaker Ryan, if he is the smart man you talk about, why would the NRA be so powerful against him and his constituents?
Well, I think they want to make sure that they get the rating. Members of Congress are ranked by everybody. I mean, NAACP, at the end of the year, you know, everybody really wants an A with the NAACP. We're ranked by organized labor, and the NRA is one also that does the rankings. And they don't want to end up getting an F. Most members on the Democratic side get Fs proudly, and they advertise it because it helps in the urban core. So Ryan understands that, and he knows that his members would have no choice but to vote for it. Nobody's going to go home and say, I know that the majority of the people in my district are for this, but by golly, you're stupid, and I know what's best, so I didn't vote for it. They want to go home and say, I listened to you, and this is what I've done.
So even though people are reeling from things like Orlando and Sandy Hook, et cetera, Aurora still, Charleston's massacre, tell me, why was this tactic used of Lewis? Why is this the method that they chose to actually do on the House floor?
Well, what happened was, this was organic. John Larson actually is the person who said, we need to do something. He went to Speaker Pelosi, and Leader Pelosi, and Leader Pelosi then said, you know, I don't know, but if you're going to do something, you know, you need to have somebody leading who knows what they're doing. Well, there's no other person on the planet, alive now, that knows more about this than John Lewis. So John Larson goes to John Lewis's office and says, look, here's the situation, what do you think? And John Lewis said, we are over here frustrated as well. He said, let's organize it, and you got to, here are the things you got to do, and you got to follow my lead on it. And who's going to look at John Lewis and say, well, no, I don't think we're going to follow your lead. So John Lewis is on the floor the entire period telling us exactly what to do.
And last week, there were some things in the Senate that took place that weren't successful on a very similar endeavor. Why do you think the House will be successful in this endeavor?
Well, the Senate did vote down five pieces of legislation. I need to say, none of this is gun control. None of it is gun control.
What is it?
Stopping terrorists from buying guns. I mean, it's a common sense gun measure. Gun control means you're trying to restrict people who have a Second Amendment, amendment right from having guns. You want to control their access to guns. We want to control the access of people who want to kill us from being able to walk into a store and get guns. And the Senate also had the closing of some loopholes. For example, you could go to a gun show and buy a gun just off the street. Anybody can be mad at you, any of us here, and go and buy a gun. And even if they are suffering from paranoia or if they're schizophrenic, you can go and buy a gun.
Let me jump in here. Here's the deal. The Congressman talked about majority of Americans. It's beyond that. 85% of Americans, based upon polling data, says this bill makes sense. 85%. That means Democrats, that means Republicans, that means independents. The reality is this here, the National Rifle Association does not want any kind of bill to pass, even though 85%. And so what Speaker Ryan is trying to do is protect his members. But here's the other deal why this is important, because I keep hearing people say, well, this thing failed, it failed in the Senate. No. This is the opportunity for that silent majority to come out of their homes, to stop just tweeting about it, Facebooking about it. It's time for them to also rise up and speak out against it. That's why this is important. And so I think what should be happening over the next several days, there should be impromptu protests and masses where people are mobilizing and organizing, because you can't have 49 dead in Orlando, 40 plus dead in Sandy Hook, and shooting after shooting after shooting after shooting, and then people say, well, we'll leave it up to them. And so I think the reason this stands out to see so many Democrats and then people from the Senate come over, it is forcing people to say, I need to get in the game. I need to get involved. Would you say that's correct, Emmanuel Cleaver?
Absolutely. And last night, one of the things that happened, which was also organic, somebody walks inside and says, there are a group of people who would like for you to come and say something to them outside. So I'm thinking there's 10 or 12 people down outside that I'm going to go and say, yeah, we're in here working, trying to do this. I walk outside and there are 400 or 500 people. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh my goodness. And nobody called them on the phone and said, come up and organize. And then about 200 additional individuals were inside the chamber up in the gallery. I think what Roland said is absolutely 100% spot on, that if the American public begins to speak out external to what's going on here in Washington, this thing will pass on the floor.
But Congressman, they have spoken out, the representatives, and how do you address people I hear your point, but how do you address the cynicism people have if they feel disenfranchised enough to say, look, if my congressman can't get a vote through, then how does my protest mean anything? How do you speak to them and motivate them still to say, it's all is not lost, this is not a futile endeavor? How do you motivate that cynicism?
Well, because what you do is you call on people to say, when Congress comes back on July 5th, 10,000, 20,000, 50,000, join Congressman John Lewis and others and sit in the hallways of Congress, to show up on Capitol Hill and literally have a die-in and lay in the hallways. What if all of a sudden a call was made to the clergy, to the believers, and say, we want you to lay down in front of the House, force members to have to step over people. And here's the deal, they got lots of cops, they ain't got that many. You have to be able to make this thing real where you have you mass mobilized. We saw 500,000 marching and protesting Black Lives Matter in New York. Imagine if you, all of a sudden you see marches springing up in Houston, Kansas City, New Orleans, Charlotte, Philadelphia. And so all of a sudden that pressure begins to be brought down on members of Congress. I don't care if you're House Speaker Paul Ryan, you can't withstand that withering pressure every day.
Well, what are the next action steps Congress and people should be taking to actually have that come into place? And looking like there may in fact be a recess until the after July 4th weekend, what do people do right now to actually take action?
Well, they need to start calling their member of Congress. They need to start sending emails. They need to write. They need to clog up the telephone system. They need to come to the Hill and stand around. Look, I've seen all kinds of politicians. I've seen, you know, dumb ones. I've seen smart ones. I haven't seen one yet that couldn't count. Mm-hmm. And so I think they're already nervous. They are nervous right now.
Yes.
Because they know that they're in a minority in a lot of other ways as well, but they're in a minority. They don't know what to do. They were in disarray, complete disarray. I had my pillows over there all day, 12 hours, I think. So, I mean, it's amazing. They don't know what to do or what to say. So they came up with a little deal. Well, let's say that this is a publicity stunt. If this is a publicity stunt, it worked.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because now people all over the country are saying exactly what you just asked me. What in the world is going on? Everybody I know is for this. But here's what they do. You start talking, they say, they won't say, well, you're trying to do gun control. Or they will say, what about my Second Amendment rights? That is the most ignorant thing. I listened to Donald Trump say, Hillary Clinton wants to take your gun. Now, I know Donald Trump probably has 185 IQ and 200 maybe, because it's real.
Well, that's big, questionable.
Real big brain, real big, real big, real big. But look, he doesn't even know how the system works.
Well, you do, Congressman Cleaver, and I'm glad that Representative John Lewis and others are joining teams, joining hands to actually take some steps and have some action plans in place for people to make the changes we talk about, not just about gun control, but also about trying to stop people from hurting other innocent lives. There's more to come on News One Now. We'll continue our coverage on the No Bill, No Break coverage from Capitol Hill. As we go to break, we will leave you with a tweet of support for the Democrats from President Barack Obama. It's 18 after the hour. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
What you just heard there was Democratic members of the House singing, "We Shall Overcome." They then changed the lyrics to, "We shall pass a bill someday." That's the goal for House Democrats as they continue their sit-in on Capitol Hill in an effort to force a vote on gun control. And here's a live look at the Capitol as the sit-in continues. Joining me now in the studio is Lucia McBeth, faith and outreach leader for Every Town for Gun Safety. She's also the mother of slain teen Jordan Davis. And joining me via Skype in Los Angeles is host Roland Martin. And still on the panel, Angela Peoples, Sir Michael Singleton, and Yolanda Young. Ma'am, how are you today?
Wet and tired, but inspired.
Well, it's raining, for everyone to understand what's happening right now in the scene. It's raining here in D.C.,
absolutely.
And people are saying in many ways that maybe there's going to be a cleanse of this Capitol Hill drama, that we're going to have a motivated Congress. What are your viewpoints on what's happening on the Hill in this sit-in and this obstinance towards gun control measures?
Well, I just think absolutely that this is a historic sit-in. There's never been anything like this that we've ever seen in Congress before. And we're so empowered and encouraged by the actions of our Democratic legislators just to stand up to the NRA gun lobby, to stand up to the Republicans that are espousing that we need less gun control. And as a victim of gun violence myself, having lost my son, to stand and support with them today was very empowering and very encouraging, and our conviction is even more strong and resolved because of their actions today and yesterday.
And what do you think, what's your view on the Republicans' tactics to try to undermine those initiatives?
I'm not surprised by that.
Why?
I mean, that's what they do. That is what they do. That is their MO, so to speak. So what we saw them do, the kind of sneak and run today, we were very disappointed and very disillusioned, and we let them know that. But we suspected that they would do something. We didn't really suspect that, believe in the fact that they were actually going to hold a vote.
Now,
Laura,
go ahead,
Laura. Roland. I want to go to Sir Michael Singleton. Sir Michael, Speaker Paul Ryan said that this is a publicity stunt, but this does not make Republicans look good when you have 85% of Americans who actually agree with the stance House Democrats are taking.
I mean, Roland, when you look at the polling numbers, you're right. It does appear that most Americans do agree that we should vote on this. Looking at the numbers, as the congressman stated, I do think a majority of those members on the Republican side would likely vote in favor of the legislation. Even Trump, before his meeting with the NRA, said that it made perfect sense to not allow someone on a terror watch list to be able to purchase a gun. Now, I do
So, Sir Michael, why then won't Republicans have the conscience, the moral conscience to say, I know the NRA, but my conscience says, you need to call this up for a vote?
Well, you know, one of the things that was mentioned, Roland, by some members of the Republican side of Congress, as well as members of the NRA, was that you would have people who are accidentally placed on the no-fly list. Now, what I have seen in the Senate, even from some Republican senators, were measures where you could correct that. I think one measure was, if someone was on the no-fly list and they believed that they were placed on the list accidentally, they could go before a judge. The judge would review whatever documents and make the determination if the person should or should not be placed on the list. So I do think that there may be some legitimacy to some of their concerns, but I do think that those are all things that we could probably more than likely fix.
But you're an anomaly,
Yolanda,
in your viewpoint,
Yolanda,
right, about it. So I want to ask Angela, if I could, because you're somebody who is kind of a foot soldier and a leader of them.
Sure.
And so when you hear Sir Michael's response about this kind of waiting period, what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, I think that we're in a really historic moment. And this waiting period, whether you're talking about how to get off the no-fly list or even how to make the background check system even more better, because I know that's something that the House Democrats are trying to push as well. Either way, thinking about the steps that the House Democrats are taking last night and today to really hold space and inspire their constituents, because we've seen over the last several years, almost nothing gets through Congress. We have to get to the brink of a shutdown to even pass a budget. And so just as the American people are frustrated with inaction, are frustrated with the constant violence and presence of guns in this country, we see the House Democrats responding to their constituents.
But shockingly, Angela, many liberal organizations are not in favor of this no-fly list.
Absolutely.
And so, and you're one of the people who I've talked to before who said you don't think the no-fly list is the answer to everything. Why?
It's definitely, well, I think that this is, and I've heard members of Congress, I was watching the coverage last night, speak about this being low-hanging fruit, sort of the kind of thing that you can, there's so much agreement on that it doesn't actually, there's a lot more steps that need to be taken to get guns off the street, to actually prevent a shooting that like what we saw in San Bernardino, or like what we saw in Orlando, or like what we saw in Sandy Hook, or the violence that we see between individuals, or even children that get access to guns and commit suicide. So there is a lot more steps to do, but I think we all can agree on is getting a vote on this one piece when we haven't seen action on anything, and particularly something as controversial as gun legislation, is a foot in the door to hopefully actually getting some real reforms that will prevent the violence.
Yolanda, you're an attorney.
Yes.
And a lot of people are focused about this whole issue of due process, which I absolutely understand. But can't we walk and chew gum at the same time? Can't we pass a law that says if you're on a terror list, you can't get a gun, while also moving to fix the no-fly list?
Oh, we can absolutely do both at the same time. As Shermichael said, there are already measures in place to do that. The question I would have, and this is for Shermichael, are Republicans finally at a point where they are having closed-door meetings and they are considering, is it time to break with the NRA? Is this, in fact, the tipping point?
Mr. McBeth, I want to ask you, when you see your son was killed tragically, when you see people being motivated with the massacres in Orlando or Charleston, et cetera, do you feel that your voice as somebody who is the mother of somebody who has been killed, do you hear that your voice is being heard, or does it take these really massive shootings and massacre for you to even feel like you have a foot in the door?
It's a combination of both. I mean, I've been told all around the country that, you know, you've inspired me. I listen to you and I recognize that I've lost no one. And if you can get up and speak and empower the nation, then I can do something. I think it's definitely a combination of both. There's still a whole faction of people in this country that are turning a blind eye because they believe it's not going to happen to them. It's not in their environment. You know, oh, it's in the ghetto. So I think it's a combination of both. It's going to be just a whole coalition of organizations and people that are going to stand up and cry out. What I say all the time is that, yes, you have to have the prayer vigils. Yes, you have to be rallying in the street. But if you do not go to the polls, if you are not actively in the legislative houses, in the capitals, and pounding on the doors and going back time and time again and calling and petitioning, nothing is really going to move. It's a concerted effort. All of those things have to be taken into consideration.
Sure, Michael, I want you to answer Yolanda's question.
Well, I mean, Roland, again, as I stated, I think there is indeed some legitimacy to the concern that there may be individuals on the terror watch list that should not be on that list. What I am mostly concerned with is figuring out measures, and I think the congressman could probably speak to this, as far as making sure that if someone does believe that they're on that list, incidentally, or whatever the case may be, that there is a process for them to be removed.
And I would like to see, I'll just say quickly, I would like to see some members of Congress make sure to introduce amendments or legislation to make sure that Muslim folks or folks with Muslim names, particularly a lot of black people, are not unfairly profiled and added to that list, because that's often what we see when the different forces are trying to balance counterterrorism efforts.
Congressman?
Well, look, my name is Cleaver, Emmanuel Cleaver. Most of you are too young to remember my cousin, who was the Minister of Communications for the Black Panthers, Eldridge
Cleaver. Eldridge Cleaver, yeah.
Sold on ice, a New York Times bestseller. I was on the terror watch list.
Wow.
I'm an ordained United Methodist pastor, mayor of Kansas City, elected to Congress, and I was having trouble getting on planes to fly to Washington to work.
We'll hear more about this right after the break. Still to come on News One. You're looking at a live look at Capitol Hill, where the Democrats are in the middle of a sit-in as they demand common sense gun laws. Plus, a Supreme Court justice cites the experiences of James Baldwin and W.E.B. Du Bois to argue against illegal stops by officers. We'll break down her impassioned dissent with Supreme Court expert Danielle Blevins. We'll be right back.
Wherever you are, We are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Here's another live look at the U.S. Capitol floor as the Democrats continue their sit-in demanding common sense gun laws.
Probably the second person killed, he was shot in the neck. His father is named Larry, and his mother is named Nancy. And I couldn't help but think of them all night. And I shed a lot of tears, to be frank. You know, what would happen if it was my Rosa? If it was my Helena? I think if you have children, if you substitute the name for your own child, it's hard not to get emotional. And I didn't mind standing here and sitting with all you because honestly, I thought of all the nights of the parents that didn't sleep. I thought of all the uncles, the aunts, the grandparents.
Yeah.
They substitute the name, it's a real name. It's a real victim. And we have a chance to do something here. And it's something that virtually all Americans agree with, except for some of my colleagues here. And that is, if our professionals, our intelligence professionals, our professionals in law enforcement say, this person is too dangerous to get on a plane because we think he'll probably try to blow it up or kill the people aboard, our professionals make that decision.
Yeah.
So he can't get on a plane, but he can go get a machine gun.
Right.
Is a live look from the floor via Periscope. And I want to go to Congressman Cleaver. Congressman Cleaver, please explain to the audience what we're actually seeing right now is against the rules. Social media is really been the platform that has allowed you and others to be able to get this message out, because right now the cameras, C-SPAN doesn't control them. They're now turned off.
Yes. I think when John Lewis started deciding how we were going to do this, he said, look, we're breaking one rule, we might as well break a lot of them. most members of Congress had no idea. I mean, somebody called me on the phone that you and I know, Roland, and said, I thought she said, let's do a telescope. So I went inside and told everybody, I said, I've just been told we can telescope. And so people said, we can? We didn't know. I mean, then young people, including many of our children, were calling, saying, you can still do this. Mm. And so when we found out we could do it, it went ahead. And C-SPAN, the rules are, number one, you cannot speak to the audience, and it is against the rules to applaud if you're in the House. They will take you out of the House of Representatives. You wear anything with any writing on it, they'll take you out. We can't go to the floor with signs. Mm. There are all kinds of rules. We broke maybe 98 or 99 rules last night, and continuing to break them this morning.
I want to jump in right to Angela. I want to go to you here. Again, I want to talk about the power of social media as well as Lucy here, because again, the reason we have been able to see the exchange, the shouts between Louie Gohmert and some Democrats, is because of Periscope. We see what's happening with social media, same thing. And so this is another example of not playing by the rules, but being able to still connect with the public and to bring them into this process. Periscope even set up a whole page where you could follow right now all of the live streams of folks who were streaming last night's proscenium.
Well, that's right. And I think what we're also seeing is really a maturation of action in this country. We're seeing members of Congress take a page really from Black Lives Matter, from the undocumented youth movement, who staged sit-ins, five or so years ago to get in the House and in the Senate to get the DREAM Act to come to a vote. And so I'm actually, personally impressed with the action and the energy that I see the members of Congress putting into this. Again, we can debate the merits of the bill and how to make it better. But this moment, really seeing the folks come together on social media, finding different ways to keep this going is inspiring. And I think it will encourage more folks who have been feeling like they're on the periphery or not seeing themselves in this movement, whether it's Black Lives Matter, whether it's against gun violence, to say there are lots of ways for all of us to engage. It's multi-generational. It's people from across the country, different regions, urban and rural environments, and being able to connect through social media and also seeing direct action as a viable tool towards moving an agenda forward. For so long, there's been a hesitancy and even a lot of folks push back on sit-ins, on disruptions. But the crisis in this moment for our country has gotten so real and so urgent that all bets are off and anything's on the table.
For you, Lucia, it's always been real and always urgent since your son's passing. What have you seen in terms of the struggles that you have faced trying to get control measures before now? And do you see this being a viable option for the future? Make change.
And this is a very interesting question because I find that with the white community, I'm always trying to get them to understand that there is a gun violence problem. Mm. To our own community, they understand the nature of the problem. We've been living that reality for a long time, but motivating them to move and to feel empowered, giving them information and tools and education to be able to, you know, create a better reality, change the narrative. So it's been very difficult because a lot of a white America that I talk to all the time, you know, the first thing they want to do is say, well, you know, the government, they're coming to take our guns away, and it's my Second Amendment right to bear arms. And I always push them even further and I say, well, who do you mean by the government? Mm-hmm. Because I want them to tell me, you mean President Obama, you know, and then I can tell them firsthand, I've worked with President Obama's initiative. I've been doing this work and that is not his goal. So let me educate you and give you the truth. You know, the gun measures that are trying to be enacted in this country are not to infringe upon your Second Amendment rights, but to place some common sense protective measures, not for you that is the law-abiding gun owner or gun enthusiast, but for individuals like Michael Dunn and individuals that are shooting down people and victims, you know, at Emmanuel 9, mm-hmm. in the Emmanuel 9 and in Orlando. Those are the individuals that we have to target. Those are the ones that we have to go after. So enacting legislation for the terror gap, that's crucial. And enacting legislation for background check legislation, that's crucial. And I try to give them the truth.
Yolanda, Congress returns July 5th. What should happen next?
Oh, we're going to have a vote. But the question I have is for Representative Cleaver. This seems to me to be a perfect storm. We have the disaster that is Donald Trump. We have, you know, now potentially an upending to the NRA. This issue silences Bernie Sanders, the gun issue silences Bernie Sanders and gives the young people behind him a reason to come on board with the Democratic Party. Is it possible that we can talk about perhaps turning the Republicans? Is it possible that Congress could turn Democratic? Like, is that too much to ask, or is that a possibility that you're hearing whispers about?
Well, I feel very comfortable that the Senate is going to become Democratic. I don't think there's a lot of doubt. I mean, even Republican pundits would tell you that. I think the House it's a little steeper hill to climb. We have 188 Democrats. You need 218 to win any measure. I don't know if we can get, I think we're 34 or something down, we'd have to win. I think we're going to close the gap, which means that their Republicans are going to have a difficult time protecting their vulnerables, because they're going to need the vulnerables to vote. Now they can say, okay, you can take a walk. They won't be able to do that after January.
Well, there's a start, and
Let me say this here, because we are out of time with this segment. The hashtag, folks, is no bill, no break. And although Congress is breaking, everybody out there who's watching and listening, it should not be a break for you. Folks should be mobilizing. Folks should be organizing. They should be saying, Congress, when you come back, we're going to sit here and press and press and press. And, of course, Congressman Cleaver is my alpha fraternity brother. And I will quote Vertner Woodson Tandy, one of our jewels, who said this: we will fight until hell freezes over, and then we will fight on the ice. I know folks saying it didn't pass last night, but if you give up, it will never pass.
That's right.
Well said. Coming up, a Supreme Court justice takes a stand against illegal stops by police officers. We'll break down her impassioned dissent with Supreme Court expert Danielle Blevins. Black businesses giving back. Find out how Wells Fargo is celebrating African-American small businesses that are working together to improve their local communities. We'll be right back.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor is upset about the court's decision to support illegal searches and seizures. The court examined a case out of Utah that questioned whether it was constitutional for evidence collected unlawfully by a police officer to be used as evidence in court. In a 5-3 decision, the court ruled the evidence does not violate the Fourth Amendment because the evidence seized weakened the unlawful stop. But Justice Sotomayor disagreed and says stops like this are all too familiar for people of color. In her dissent, she uses James Baldwin's The Fire Next Time, W.E.B. Du Bois' The Souls of Black Folk, and Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me to support her argument. The justice says those works show what it's like living with the constant fear that you could be susceptible to unconstitutional searches. A portion of her dissent says, by legitimizing the conduct that produces this double consciousness, this case tells everyone, white and black, guilty and innocent, that an officer can verify your legal status at any time. It says that your body is subject to invasion while courts excuse the violation of your rights. It implies that you are not a citizen of a democracy, but the subject of a carceral state just waiting to be cataloged. Joining me now is Danielle Blevins, a U.S. Supreme Court correspondent. And still on the panel, Angela Peoples, Shermichael Singleton, and Yolanda Young. I want to get right into it with you, Danielle. What exactly does this ruling mean?
Basically, it means that the protections that we had against police officers, not just police, also the FBI, taking us in our belongings and the deterrent that the law had set up in the exclusionary rule no longer applies. They basically raised the bar.
Officers are not allowed to give an unreasonable stop and seizure. They have to have reasonable suspicion to stop. You have to be a reason. They can't just profile and shake you down. There had to be a reason until now,
because we know that this was an illegal stop. That is not an issue in this case. But the thing is, they found drugs. They found drugs on this person because of this illegal stop. And in the past, it's anything that comes from an illegal stop, anything that the fruit of the poisonous tree, because that was illegal, anything that comes of that was supposed to be excluded. Now the court has said, not so much. You can keep it in. We'll allow that to be used against this person. And this person was convicted of upholding drugs.
Now that's so devastating for the community, because if there's always a justifiable reason that the officer can come up with and say, well, I stopped you legally, but now I found drugs, therefore I was right all along. My instinct caught up with me and I was right. What is the domino effect of that?
Basically, now officers can look at any situation and come up with any type of pretext for saying, oh, my gut feeling. And even if they were wrong, the person wasn't doing anything wrong, this person now has been stopped. They've now been arrested or for some pretext reason. And the fact, yes, they may go to court and they may get dismissed, but the fact they've already been arrested, they've already had to go through all of these types of stops just for maybe talking back to a police officer, for making the officer feel uncomfortable, whatever. So now the officer now has a pretext, and there are no constitutional bars that will protect
now,
citizens.
Who joined Sotomayor in her dissent?
All the ladies, right?
Who wrote the majority opinion, Danielle?
We have all the men, including Justice Clarence Thomas.
Well, what do you see going forward? Is this going to be a revolution or a problem?
This is going to definitely be a problem in practicum, on the street, because now you have officers who no longer have a bar. Justice Thomas said in his majority opinion that people can now sue. They have the civil liability. But the thing is, you only get to the civil part once the criminal's pretty much done. And the thing is, if you're relying on cities and states that are now going bankrupt to refund you for the hassle,
good luck with that.
Exactly.
Right, Danielle? Well, coming up, compassionate businesses are being recognized by a Wells Fargo initiative called Working Together. Hear how one company is making big profits while giving back to the community in a big way. Stay with us.
The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin.
There are over 2 million Black-owned businesses in this country. Many serve as the backbones of their neighborhoods. That's why Wells Fargo is celebrating small businesses that give back to their communities in an initiative called Working Together. One of the companies they are highlighting is DigiDoc, a Washington, D.C.-based company that provides business improvement solutions, including document management. Chief Executive Officer Daryl Wiggins and Chief Operating Officer Janelle Merritt join us to talk about their business community connection. Hello, how are you all? I'm doing great. Tell me about this fabulous business venture you have.
So Document Managers, DigiDoc, we trade as Document Managers, is an IT firm that focuses on helping our customers get the right information to the right person at the right time. Mm-hmm. And we really manage documents and information to do that.
And tell me, how does the community influence your business?
So our business is really influenced by the community because we recognize that we have to be a partner in the community mm-hmm. to be successful. We also recognize that we have to focus on the constituents. So if we focus on those constituents and focus on the community, that's just simply good business.
And why is that such a hard lesson for many businesses to understand, that you have to have this partnership, you have to give back to the community? Why did you know that it was so important for you to do?
Because it's really couched as this social responsibility and not good business and not part of the profit equation. But we recognize it as being part of the profit equation, that government set out these programs to provide great people and to bring those great people to you as a business person. And as a small business, it's extremely hard to find talented people. And the government puts these processes in place that help you find these talented people. So we see that as part of our profit equation. And to minimize our recruiting costs.
Go ahead, sorry.
I'm sorry, and we also use that opportunity to coach and train, and then we are able to retain that talent for an extremely long period of time.
It's smart business. Now, you have a partnership with the D.C. Youth Rehabilitation Services, right, and the Marion Barry Summer Youth Employment Program. How did that begin?
Well, we actually have a business partnership with D.C. government. We do business with them. And as part of that business partnership, they reach out to their business partners, letting them know about the programs that are available, the program DYRS, Department of Youth Rehabilitative mm-hmm. Services, and also the Youth Summer Employment Program, to say, hey, you're a business partner for the district, and we have this program available to you, and we're going to have great candidates in this program, and we want to avail those candidates for them.
And have you had a very successful turnout? Do you have a strong following in those different programs?
Absolutely, we have. We actually have been able to retain some of those students from year to year. In terms of the summer youth employment, we actually were awarded one of the top vendors or top partners with that particular program. We're one of two companies that simply supplements the wages that the children receive.
Wonderful. And there's also an Entrepreneurial Leadership Academy, right?
Right.
Tell me about that.
So actually, the Entrepreneurial Leadership Academy started at my church, at Zion Church. The pastor there is Keith Battle. And it was really his vision to see how we could bring this whole concept of entrepreneurship to our parishioners, and how we could teach them the difference between income and wealth, and how to build wealth that is sustainable and bequeathable, right? So how do you bequeath wealth? So I started it about 5 years ago under the vision of my pastor, and we've been doing it and having classes, and a lot of folks who've been in those classes have graduated and now run their own business and are now employers.
You are a company that's doing wonderful things in the community. How can we learn more about your organization? And how can we use your services?
www.documentmanagers.us mm-hmm. is where we can be found. We're headquartered in Washington, D.C. We also have a production center in Montgomery County and an office in Atlanta, Georgia.
Wonderful. And the Leadership Academy information's on there as well, people who want to be a part of it.
Exactly.
Yes.
Thank you so much for being here. What a wonderful organization. I'm glad Wells Fargo has teamed up with you all. Well, I'm Laura Coates, and this is News One Now. We'll be right back.
Kickstart your day at 7 and get the news you need from the perspective you want. News One Now with Logan Martin every weekday morning at 7 on TV One.
It's birthday shout-out time. Rapper Memphis Bleek turns 38. American Idol's Randy Jackson turns 60. And Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas turns 68. On this day in history, in 1970, Charles Rangel defeats Adam Clayton Powell in the Democratic primary to become a U.S. congressman from New York. And in 2007, Anthony Reid becomes the first black person to complete a marathon on all seven continents. We leave you with another live look at the U.S. Capitol, where Democrats are in the midst of a sit-in as they demand common sense gun laws. Roland will be here tomorrow with the latest. Thank you for joining us and have a great day.
No one here is suggesting that we do what Australia did. No one. But it is interesting to note that following the implementation of that law, there have been no mass shootings in Australia.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.